The three of them rode out the next morning. They headed for the tall, shining mountains.
Where will your friends go, Preacher?
They'll scatter, Smoke. Most of them will head back into the mountains, find a lonely valley, and they'll never come out again. A few still got people back east, and I guess they'll head there. But they won't stay unless they die there. It'll be too tame for them. And the own people won't want them around more than 4 or 5 days. They'll just want to get shut of them.
That's sad. Why won't they want them?
Well, back east, Smoke, they got written laws a body's supposed to live by. Ain't none of us followed no law except for our own for more than 50 years. Law of common sense. You don't put your hands on another man. You don't steal from him. You don't cheat him. You don't call him a liar. You do, you're gonna get killed. Yeah, out here, Smoke, man pretty well respects the rights of the other fella. And don't none of us need no goddamn lawyer to tell us how to do that. It'll be the way out here for a while longer, but the fancy folks will get all head up and fiddle with it till it's ruined. The worst is yet to come, Smoke. You wait and see. Thank God I won't be around to see it.
What do you mean, ruined?
Lawyers read meanings into words that ain't supposed to be there. Messing up what should be left of common sense. A hell's fire, Smoke. Rattlesnake crawls into your blankets with you. You don't ask him if he's gonna bite you. You kick him out and you shoot him or you stomp him. Well, it's the same with a man. Man does you a deliberate wrong, and don't never let no smooth-talking lawyer man tell you no different, Smoke. Everybody knows right from wrong. You go after that man, you settle up your way. To hell with lawyers. Damn every one of them.
I'll go along with you on that, Preacher. That's one of the reasons I brought my son out here.
Well, Smoke's got maybe 25 years before this country gets all worded up with them fancy-pants lawyers. After that, a man won't be able to be a man no more. And it's coming, boys. You can bet on it. Well, ain't no use fretting about it now. Because right now, we got our hair to worry about. We're going to be traveling through hostile country. And the Sand Creek Massacre is still fresh in the minds of the Indians. Soldiers wiped out an entire Indian village. Men, women, papooses. Mostly Cheyenne and some Arapaho. Black Kettle was the chief. Happened last year, and the Indians still got hard feelings about that. A Colonel Shivington was in charge, so I'm told.
Will we pass by?
No, it's north and some east of here. But I seen it right after it happened. Damn near made me puke. There weren't no call for it. Black Kettle's brother, White Antelope, he was killed in that raid. And Black Kettle ain't no man to mess with. Left Hand, chief of the Arapaho, he showed his bravery and scorn of the white men by standing in front of his tent with his arms folded across his chest, refusing to fight. Damn soldiers killed him too. White men ain't no saints, Smoke. They can be just as mean and ornery as they claim the Indians are.
Where is Black Kettle now?
On the warpath. So if either of you gets to feeling your hair start to tingle, you let me know, because that means the Indians is close by.
For the next several days, they followed the Arkansas River, then cut northwest through the Arkansas Valley.
I ain't never seen the likes of this.
Well, there's lots of things you ain't seen, Smoke. But you will, I'm figuring. If you don't get mauled by a bear, of course, or bit by a rattler, fall off your horse, break your neck, get caught up in a landslide or a blizzard, yeah, or eat bad meat, drink poison water, shoot yourself in the foot and bleed to death, or get your hair lifted by engines.
Kirby pointed to plants on the desolate brown hills.
What's them things?
Them's is prickly pear and bulk cactus. In the spring, both have right pretty flowers on them. And over there, that's yucca. Them long, tall, white flowers on them is what the Spanish call Madonna candles. Named them after their mama, I guess. I don't rightly know. You know, Smoke, most everything the good Lord created can be used for something. The Indians use the guts of them plants to make rope. Good, stout rope, too. And I ought to know, because I've been tied up with it a time or two. And if you feel like a need for a bath, then a man ought to get wet with water 2-3 times a year. You could dig up some of that yucca root, and you can use that for soap. Makes a good lather. Keep that in mind if you start to get real gamey. But don't overdo baths. I believe a body needs a chance to rest.
Emmett's coughing had gotten worse the past week, but he offered no explanation, and neither Preacher nor Kirby asked.
Hell, up here ways will bear a little more west. Head for a trading post I know, called Pueblo.
I've heard that name.
Yeah, it's known a bit. Town of the Mormons, mostly. Back in 45 or 47, Mormons tried to make a settlement there. I come up on them a time or two. They is some notional folks. Don't believe like we do. Don't never talk religion with them. Man, they'll mess up your mind. I try to keep shy of them.
But what happened to the people who tried to settle there?
I don't really know. I come back through here, me and Rattlesnake Williams. Oh, I reckon it were 52 or 53, and we didn't see hide nor hair of them. I hear tell they went up north, back to Utah. Now, don't get me wrong. Them Mormons was good folks. They help you out if you needed a hand. But you best know what you're doing if you plan on trading with them. Hey, good traders. And don't mess with they women folk. They get real damn touchy about the females.
The only thing Kirby knew about females was that they were different from men. Just exactly how they were different was still a mystery to him. He had asked his pa a time or two, but Emmett got all red in the face and just cleared his throat a lot. Said he'd tell Kirby when the time came. And so far, the time had not yet come. Kirby remembered the time 3 years back when a carnival came through his part of Missouri. One of the girls, just about his own age, had made a bunch of eyes at him. She'd cornered Kirby at the edge of the lot and told him for $2 she'd make a man out of him. Then she'd reached down with her hand and flat out grabbed Kirby. Nobody'd ever grabbed him there, scared him so bad he took off into the woods and ran right into a tree, knocked himself unconscious for half an hour. Kirby never told anybody about that.
Where's Utah?
West of us. You'll see it one of these days, Smoke.
They pulled up to rest, and Kirby's bay began tugging at the reins, trying to head off east. Kirby finally had to brutally jerk the reins to settle the animal.
Smells water.
Preacher pointed to a small water hole.
But that's bad water. Poison. Horse sometimes ain't got no sense when it comes to water. Injuns call that water Wanichi. Means no good.
Kirby rolled that word around his tongue, memorizing it. Wanichi.
How can you tell if water is no good?
Look for bones of small animals and birds close by. Can't always go by smell or taste, boy. Now you'll learn, Smoke. I'll teach you.
Why do you want to teach me, Preacher?
Well, because I'm getting old. I like to leave something of what I know behind when I go see the elephant. I got no one else to leave it with.
You were never married?
Oh, hell's fire, yes. 6 times. Engine ceremonies. I got 12, 15 youngins running around out here. Half-breeds. But most of them don't know me for what I am, and I guess I don't know them neither. That weren't the way I planned it. Just worked out that way. Wouldn't know most of them if I saw them. I'm just another white man. Probably just as soon shoot me as look at me, if the truth be told.
Why?
Well, they breeds, that's why. Some tribes don't look with much favor on breeds. Then they's them tribes that being a breed don't make no difference. See, Injuns ain't all alike, Smoke. They just as different in thinking as white men. And just as quarrelsome, too. With other tribes, of course. If an Injun would have ever tried to get along and unite against us, white man would have never got past Kansas. I think Injuns is the greatest fighters the world will ever know. But they just can't get together against us. And that's something I'm right grateful for.
They took their time getting to Pueblo, with Kirby learning more from that old mountain man each day. And he was eager to learn, retaining all the old man told him. The weeks on the trail had begun the transformation of the boy into the edge of manhood. Emmett mused as they rode. Kirby was 16, and he had already killed half a dozen men. His son's quickness and ease with the Navy Colts had stuck in the man's mind. The father had handled guns all his life. Before taking up farming, he had been marshal of a small town in Missouri on the Kansas border, and he had killed 2 men during his tenure in office. God alone knew how many men he had killed in the war. But Kirby handled the Colts like they were an extension of his arms. And fast? God damn, that boy was fast. Kirby practiced an hour each day drawing and dry firing the Colts. In only a matter of weeks, his draw had become a blur, too fast for the eye to follow, and he was deadly accurate. He was glad they had run into Preacher, and he was glad the mountain man had taken such an interest in Kirby. He was also glad the boy could take care of himself in a bad situation, because although the father had not told the son, the move westward had not been pure impulse. Even if his wife had not been dead, Emmett would have moved westward. He had given his word to Mosby. If it took him forever, Emmett had sworn to Mosby he would find and kill three men, Stratton, Potter, and Richards. And he was sure Preacher had guessed there was a mission to fulfill in the back of the Elder Jensen's mind. Preacher was no fool. He was sharp. Emmett would have to confide in the old man sometime soon, for the three traitors and murderers, Potter, Stratton, and Richards, had said many times they were going to the place called Idaho when the war ended. And with the stolen Confederate gold, they would have ample funds to start a business. Ranches, more than likely, although one of them had expressed a desire to open up a trading post. Emmett knew if he found the men at all, it might take months, even years. He also knew he didn't have years, but he had to find them, and he had to kill them or be killed trying. While Kirby rode on ahead, his bay prancing and the boy taken to the new land like a colt to a field of clover, Preacher hung back to speak with Emmett, both of them keeping one eye on the boy.
You got a burr under your saddle, Emmett. You want to talk about it?
I got things to do, and it might take me some time to do them.
Hey, I figured as much.
Yeah, I figured you would have. I took no allegiance to the federal government after Lee surrendered, but I did swear to kill three men and get back as much of the Confederate gold they stole as possible. I'll do it, too.
The war's over. Who are you going to give the gold to?
Yeah, I might give it to Kirby. Maybe I'll just toss it in the river. Don't know. It's tainted. Preacher, you take care of my boy?
You know that without asking.
Teach him what you know?
Yeah, that's my plan. But there's more to this than you're saying. You had that cough long?
You're pretty sharp, Preacher.
Yeah, well, I don't know about that. I just keep my eyes and my ears open, that's all.
I caught a ball through the lung. Laid me flat on my back for weeks. Got infected. Then lung fever hit the other lung. Maybe, just maybe, if I stayed in a dry climate, I might make it, according to the doctors. But they didn't sound hopeful. I can't do that. I swore I'd find those men.
Who are they?
Wiley Potter, Josh Richards, and a man named Stratton. They turned traitor and robbed some gold meant to keep the Confederacy going a while longer. That was bad enough, but they killed several men while stealing the gold. One of the men killed was my son, Luke.
Smoke know that?
No. He thinks his brother was killed fighting with Lee in the wilderness. If I don't come back from this, you tell him the truth, all right?
You can count on it.
I'll be pulling out after I stock up with some supplies in Pueblo. I'll tell Kirby all I think he needs to know.
Kirby stood in front of the trading post at dawn, watching his father ride out, pack horse trailing. Emmett had taken only a few of the gold coins, leaving the rest with Kirby. The young man was conscious of the weight of the coins in the leather bag around his neck. His father stopped, spun his horse, and waved at his son. Kirby returned the wave, and then his paw was gone, dipping out of sight over the rise of a small hill. Preacher sat on the porch of the trading post, watching, saying nothing. Kirby turned.
Will he be back?
If he can. Some things Smoke a man's just got to do before his time on Earth slips away. Your pa's got things to do. Look, Smoke, if you want to cry, and there ain't no shame in a man crying, you best go on round back and do it. Get it over with.
I'm a man. I lived alone and worked the land and paid the taxes, all by myself. I haven't cried since Ma died.
Well then, we best buy some salt and flour and beans and such. Get you outfitted. Then we'll ride on out of here.
Where will we meet up with Pa?
Brown's Hole, if and he's lucky. Next year, year after. He'll get word to us.
Let's get outfitted.
The man behind the counter at the trading post gave the boy $10 for the scalps in his war bag, winking at Preacher as he did so. Kirby had not seen the wink. Kirby pointed to a shiny new Henry repeating rifle on the rack.
I want one of those, and 100 rounds of 44s.
Kirby took a few coins from the leather bag.
For the Henry, I'll trade you this Spencer and pay the difference. Whatever's fair.
Man and boy haggled for 15 minutes, the man finally throwing up his arms in an exaggerated gesture of surrender. The transaction was done. Kirby bought an extra cylinder for his left-hand 36 and a sack full of powder and shot. Preacher had told him he knew of a friendly band of Injuns up north of the post a ways. He'd see to it that Smoke got himself a pair of moccasins and leggings and a buckskin jacket. Fancy beaded.
I ain't got that kind of money to waste, Preacher.
It ain't gonna cost you nothing. I know the lady who'll make them.
She must like you pretty well.
She do. She's my daughter.
September, 1865. The pair rode easily but carefully through the towering mountains and lush timber. They had once again crossed the Arkansas and were now almost directly between Mount Elbert to the north and Mount Harvard to the south. They had nooned and nighted just outside a small trading post on the banks of the Arkansas, which would later become the town of Buena Vista, and picked up bacon and beans and coffee. They had left before dawn, both of them seeking the solitude of the high lonesome. It had not taken Kirby long to fall prey to the lure of the lonesome. The country was wild and beautiful, and except for Injuns, sparsely populated.
Where are we heading?
Well, in a roundabout way to one of my cabins, on the North Fork. We'll have to winter there. It's gonna be a bad one, too.
How can you tell that this early?
Leaves on the aspen. Whenever they start turning gold this early in the fall, winter's gonna be a bitch, kitty. You can bet on it. But we'll have things to do, Smoke. Hunt, run traps, and chop wood, and hell, just stay alive. That there's the mainest thing.
Sometimes I get the feeling we're the first white men to see this country, Preacher.
I know the feeling well, but these mountain men threw here before I was born. Not too many years ago, an army man named Gunnison, Captain Gunnison, as I recall, came through here. That was back in 52 or 53. He was charting the land.
For what?
Railroad, I heard.
When they gonna build it?
Oh, not in my lifetime, I hope. I don't want to see this here country all tore up. Pilgrims coming in with their plows, dragging the women and squalling kids with them. Damn nuisance. Makes my skin crawl.
Oh, that could be fleas, Preacher.
Don't you sass an old man, boy.
Some people might call the railroad progress, Preacher.
Yeah, well, some people might paint wings on a pig and try to make it fly, too. No, sir. Land ought to be left the way God made it. Already folk in here poking holes in the ground, looking for gold and silver. They're scaring off the game, making the Injuns mad at everybody. It's a damn shame and it's a disgrace, too.
Preacher?
Yeah, Smoke?
What happened back at the fort? Bent's fort, I mean. Did the Injuns destroy it?
No. Old Bent blew it up himself. That was back in, I guess 52, I think.
Blew up his own fort? That's crazy. Why would he do that?
Old Bill Bent was probably one of the finest men I ever knowed. I guess he just got discouraged when the fur trade kind of petered out. That's back about 50 then. He tried to sell the fort to the government, but they fiddled-faddled around for 2 years trying to make up the mines. As far as I'm concerned, ain't been nobody in government had a mine since Crockett. Anyways, old Bill just blowed the damn thing up, loaded his goods on wagons, moved down the Arkansas to Short Timber Creek. Set up 2-3 more places, but they weren't none of them nearabouts as grand as the first one. Yes, sir, Smoke. Bent's fort had nice living quarters, had a bar, had a billiard room. But their bar served up a drink called Taos Lightning. And let me tell you, it were everything it was cracked up to be. Struck your stomach like a fulminate cap to powder.
The old man and the young man rode on, climbing higher. The air cool as it pulled at their lungs. They rode for an hour without speaking, content to be surrounded by God's handiwork.
Where is Mr. Bent now, Preacher?
I don't rightly know, Smoke. He were married 2 times that I know of, both times to Injun women. His first wife died, I can't remember her name. But then old Bill hitched up with her sister, Yellow Woman. Last I heard, he was living with one of his kids on the Purgatoire River.
Is he a legend?
Oh, you damn sure he is. Just like you will be, Smoke, someday.
I'll never be a legend, Preacher.
Yeah, you will. I can see it all around you. I can see it in everything you do.
Well, I guess only time will prove that, Preacher.
As much as the good Lord gives you, Smoke.
That winter of 65-66 was a brutal one. with days of snow that sometimes piled up to the shuttered windows of the cabin along the banks of the North Fork. With time on his hands, Kirby read and reread many times the McGuffey Reader his father had bought for him. And he found, much to his surprise, that Preacher had a dozen or so thick volumes himself, including the selected works of a man called Shakespeare.
I didn't know you read, Preacher.
No, I can't read nary a word. But I wintered once with a fellow who, as it turned out, had been a school teacher back east. Them books belonged to him.
Belonged?
Yeah, thought himself quite a ladies' man, that fella did. About 20 years ago, give or take some, he took a shining to a squaw over the mountain east of here. Only problem was that their squaw already had herself a buck, and that engine didn't much cotton to that school teacher making eyes at his woman. Whew, he caught them together one afternoon, and they was kissing and things.
What things?
Things. Don't interrupt my story. That buck killed the school teacher, cut off the woman's nose, and kicked her out. I got left with the books and the body. I buried the body. Didn't know what the hell to do with the books, so I kept them. Used to be more of them there, but the rats ate them up over the years.
Cut off her nose?
Yeah, Injun way of divorce, you might call it. It varies from tribe to tribe.
What happens to the man if he's unfaithful to the woman?
Well, some tribes a woman can kick him and his goods right out of the wickiup. And he ain't got no say in the matter, none at all.
Seems fair.
Yeah, some books might not agree with you, especially this time of year.
The Chinook winds blew once in the late winter of 66, melting the snow and creating a false illusion of spring, confusing the vegetation and the animals. The warm winds also brought a stirring within the man-child called Smoke, who is now in his 17th year.
It ain't gonna last. Likely be a blizzard tomorrow. Relax, Smoke. Spring will be here before you know it. You act like you got the juices running in you.
What do you mean?
Girls! Come on, you know.
No, sir. I don't know nothing about girls. I figured you'd tell me about females.
Oh, shit. Look, there will come a time, and this ain't the time, that you'll learn all there is to learn for a man to know about females. And a bunch you don't want to know. Good God, they're the most aggravating creatures God ever put on this here earth. Can't live with them, can't live without them.
That's what my father used to say. But he'd always grin at Ma when he said it.
Yeah, he better grin.
What do we do when spring does get here?
I start learning you good, and you start being a man.
I wonder where my pa is.
Well, he's either on the way to doing what he set out to do, or he's already done her, or he's doing it.
Or he's dead.
Yeah, may happen. We all get to see the elephant someday, son.
I don't know the whole story, Preacher. Pa said you'd tell me when it was time. I reckon it ain't time just yet.
That's so, Smoke, yeah.
All right. But I'll tell you this, Preacher. If those men he went after killed him, I'll track them down, one by one. And I'll kill them and anyone who gets in my way.
Preacher had a sudden flash of precognition, foreseeing coming hard, chilling the old mountain man.
Yeah. Yeah, I reckon you will, Smoke.
Soon, the warm winds blew once again, and this time they were the real advanced guard of spring. First to show their appreciation of the cycle of renewal were the peonies, bursting forth in a cacophony of color. The columbine, which one day would be the official flower of the yet-to-be-admitted state of Colorado, cast forth its contribution to spring in colors of blue and lavender and purple and white. Valleys and foothills, the plains and the mountains, well, they all exploded in a holiday of technicolor. And on that day, Preacher packed his gear and told his young friend to do the same. With their Henry repeating rifles across their saddles, the pair rode out, heading northeast from the North Fork into the timber and the mountains. Still, 1 hour each day, the boy called Smoke practice with his deadly Colts, perfecting what some would later write was not only the first fast draw, but the fastest fast draw. Those few who would get to know the man called Smoke would say he was even faster than the legendary Texas gunfighter John Wesley Hardin, possessed more cold nerve than Wild Bill, was meaner than Curly Bill, and as much a hand with the ladies as Sundance. But for now, Kirby was learning, and the mountain man taught him well. Still spry as a cat, tougher than Wang leather, Preacher taught Kirby fist fighting and boxing and engine wrestling. But more importantly, he taught him to win in a fight. He taught him that it didn't make a damn how you won, just win. He taught him to kick, gouge, throw, and bite.
The smoke, not knowing the land and the animals can get a body dead. Now I'm gonna start like you don't know nothing, which ain't that far from the truth. So, snakes.
Huh?
Snakes! Tell me what you know about them.
I know to leave some of them alone.
Well, that's wise, but that ain't near enough.
Well, I know a poisonous snake's got to coil before they strike.
Wrong! A rattler can short strike at you with just the power of his neck. You remember that, and you remember this, too. Rattler meat is good to eat. Man, I have et me a poke of it. Right tasty. But be damn sure the critter's dead before you start to skin them. They get right hostile if you jerk the skin off of them before they're dead.
Wouldn't you?
Yeah, I guess so. You know, the Injuns was gonna skin me alive one time up on the Platte. That's how I got my name, Preacher. I preached to them heathens for hours. Didn't think I knowed so many words. I even made me up a language that day and night. Called it the unknown tongue. But I made believers out of them savages. I reckon they thought I was crazy. Injuns won't harm a crazy man, see? Well, most of them, that is. They think he's some kind of god. Finally, that chief just put his hands over his ears and told his bucks to turn me loose. Said I was hurting his ears, something fierce. I got my pelts and rode out of there without looking back.
And you've been called Preacher ever since.
Yep.
Preacher had blindfolded the young man and spun him around like a top. Then Preacher removed the sash.
All right, which direction you facing, Smoke?
North?
Wrong. You looked at that moss on yonder tree, didn't you?
Yes, sir.
That kind of thing is going to get you killed, boy. Moss, if there's light and water enough, can grow all the way around the tree. Man can wander around in circles and die believing the moss only grows to the north.
Then?
Sun, stars, lay of the land, and a feel for them all. Come a time, Smoke, you'll just know. It won't take long.
The days passed into weeks, and Kirby's education grew, and so did he, gaining weight, filling out with hard muscle. The young man pointed his finger at a bush full of berries.
I know about them. We got them in Missouri. Don't eat them. They're poison.
Yeah, but some birds do.
Yeah, but you said not to believe that old story that anything a bird eats, a man can eat.
That's right. See them flowers over yonder? They're right pretty. Lots of birds eat them, but they can kill a man or else make him so sick he'll wish he was dead. That oak tree yonder? I've known folk to boil the bark and make a bitter-tasted tonic. I never cared for the stuff myself.
Why?
Because it tastes like poison water, and I just don't care to drink no poison water.
As they traveled, they would occasionally encounter roaming bands of Indians, most of them friendly to Preacher. Once, after they had palavered with a band of Cheyenne, Kirby looked back in time to see one of the braves making a circling motion at his temple with a forefinger. He told Preacher,
"Sure, that's a sign for a crazy person. You just let him keep believing that, and we'll keep our hair."
Why do Injuns think a crazy person is a god?
Well, now they believe he's possessed by gods. You're about the same thing to them. And the Injuns don't want no bad medicine with no god, see? They don't worship like we do, Smoke. Injuns, they worship the sun, the stars, trees, the moon, rivers. Hell, near about everything. At least the Injuns I know does. They can't rightly tell you why they think a man crazy is that way. I've heard 12 different versions from 12 different medicine men. Don't none of them make no sense to me. Sound like the crazy.
During their wanderings, they met trappers and hunters, a few of whom rode from the west. Kirby would always ask about Emmett, but no one had seen him or heard about him. It was as if the man had dropped off the face of the earth.
Well, Idaho is wild, Smoke. There's only a few places settled. We ain't heard nothing by next spring. Then we'll strike out for the hole.
The pair spent the winter of 66-67 in an old cabin on the banks of the Colorado River, with the northern slopes of Castle Peak far to the south, just visible on most days. Here, the pair ran traps, hunted, and on the bitter cold days and nights, stayed snug in the cabin built some 40 years earlier by a long-dead friend of Preacher's.
What happened to the man who built this cabin?
He got tied up with a mountain lion one afternoon. The puma won.
In the spring of 67, they sold their pelts at a post and rode out for the northwest.
Show you where we used to rendezvous, Smoke. Back about 30, I think it were. Worst damn place I ever been in my life. We called it Fort Misery. First time I ever ate dog before. But it wasn't too bad that I recall.
You've eaten dog since?
Oh, sure, many times. And so will you. That's why Injuns keep so many dogs around the camp. Come winter, food gets scarce, they cook up a dog. It's right good.
Kirby hoped he would never eat dog.
This Brown's Hole, that where we're heading?
Yeah, on the Utah side of Brown's Hole, just west of Wild Canyon. Quiet there. I told your pa about it, and he said if and he could, he'd meet us there. Somehow.
Kirby didn't like the sound of that somehow. They had taken their time riding through the Flat Tops primitive area, past Sleepy Cat Peak, and into the Danforth Hills. They made camp at the confluence of the Little Snake and Yampa Rivers, and they stayed put for 3 weeks.
What are we waiting for?
Somebody'll be along directly. They always is. So you just hold your water, Smoke. We got time.
At the end of the 3rd week, a mountain man rode in. He looked, at least Kirby, to be just about as old as God.
You're just as ugly as I remembered, Preacher.
Poor shit! You should talk, Grizzly. I remembered what Elk Man told you 30 years ago. He said you could hire your face out to scare little kids.
Hell, Preacher, I didn't ride 70 miles to get insulted.
The hell you didn't. I'm one of the few people that'll even stand to look at you. Come on, light and sit. We got grub.
You cook it?
Hell yes, I cooked it.
That's even a worse insult.
Grizzly dismounted, dropped the reins on the ground, and filled a plate with food. After his second helping, piling his plate high with venison, wild potatoes mixed with wild onions and gravy, the old mountain man wiped his tin plate clean with a piece of Kirby's pan bread, then poured a third cup of coffee.
Bread was good anyways. Boy must have made that.
I'd rather have to buy your traps and feed you for any length of time. You eat like a damn hog.
Preacher and Grizzly insulted one another for a full half hour more, each one trying to outdo the other. Kirby had never heard such tall tales and wild insults in his life. The men finally agreed it was a draw.
Do I talk in front of the boy?
He ain't no boy. He's a grown man now.
Oh, right. Man rode into the hole about 2 months ago. All shot up. Had a bad cough.
Is he still alive?
Don't never interrupt a man when he's a palaverin'. Tain't polite. One thing about Injuns, they know manners. They gonna allow a man to speak his piece without interrupting. Of course, they might skin you alive the minute you finish, but they ain't gonna interrupt you while you's talking.
Sorry.
Accept it. No, he's dead. Strange man. Dug his own grave. Come the time I buried him. He's planted on that there little plain at the base of the high peak, east side of the canyon. You remember it, Preacher?
Preacher nodded. Grizzly reached inside his war bag and pulled out a heavy sack. He tossed the sack to Kirby.
This be yourn from your pa. Right smart amount of gold.
Again, Grizzly dipped into the buckskin and beaded bag, pulling out a rawhide-wrapped flat object.
This here is a piece of paper with words on it. Names, your pa said, that the men who put lead in them. He said you'd know what to do, but for me to tell you, don't do nothing rash. All right, then. I done what I give my word I'd do. Now I'll be going. Thank you both for the grub. Yep.
Without another word, the old mountain man mounted his pony, gathered his pack horses, and rode off east. He didn't look back.
Well, ain't no point moving now. Be dark in 3 hours. We'll pull out at first light.
At 18, Kirby had achieved his full height. 6 feet 2 inches tall, packing 180 pounds of bone and muscle. His shoulders, arms, and hands were powerful. His legs long, his waist lean. His hair was long and ash blonde. His hands and face were deeply tanned. His eyes were an unreadable brown. The bay his father had given him had not survived the first winter, slipping on ice and breaking a leg, forcing Kirby to shoot the animal. He now rode a tough mountain horse he had traded from an Injun, a huge Appaloosa, much larger than most of that breed. The Injun had ridden away chuckling, thinking he had gotten the better of the deal, because the Appaloosa would allow no one to ride it, refusing to be broken. But Kirby had slow-gentled the animal, bringing it along slowly and carefully, step by step. Now, no one but Kirby could put a saddle on the animal, much less ride him. He was a stallion, and he was mean, his eyes warning any knowledgeable person away. In addition to its distinctive markings, the mottled hide, vertically striped hooves, and pale eyes, the Appaloosa had a perfectly shaped seven between his eyes, and that became his name, Seven. Gone was the McClellan saddle, replaced by a Western rig, slightly heavier, but much more comfortable. Emmett's horses had been picketed close to the base of Zenobia Peak. His gear was by his grave, covered with a ground sheet and secured with rocks. There were several more horses than Emmett had left with.
You read them words on the paper that your pa left you?
Not yet.
I'll go set up camp at the hole. I reckon you'll be along directly?
Tomorrow. About noon.
All right. See you then.
Preacher headed north. He would cross Vermilion Creek, then cut west into the hole. Smoke would find him when he felt ready for human company again. But for now, the young man needed to be alone with his paw. Kirby unsaddled Seven, allowing him to roll. He stripped the gear from the pack animals, setting them grazing. He picketed only the pack animals, for Seven would not stray far from him. Taking a small hammer and a miner's spike from his gear, Kirby began the job of chiseling his father's name into a large, flat rock. He couldn't remember exactly when his paw was born, but he thought it was about 1815. Headstone in place, secured by heavy rocks, Kirby built his small fire, put coffee on the boil in the blackened pot, and then sat down to read the letter from his paw.
Son, I found some of the men who killed your brother Luke and stole the gold that belonged to the Gray. There's more of them than I first thought. I killed two of them that worked for them, but they got lead in me and I had to hightail it out. Came here. Not going to make it. Son, you don't owe nothing to the cause of the Gray, so don't get it in your mind you do. Make yourself a good life and look to my resting place if you need help. Preacher can tell you some of what happened, but not all. Remember, look to my grave if you need help. I also got word that your sis, Janie, left that gambler and is took up with an outlaw down in Arizona, a place called Tucson. I wouldn't fret much about her. She is mine, but I think she's trash. Don't know where she got that streak from. I'm getting tired. Seeing is hard. Light's fading. I love you, Kirby. Smoke. Pa.
Kirby reread the letter.
Look to my grave if you need help.
He couldn't understand that part. He pulled up his knees and sat his head on them, feeling like he ought to cry or something. But no tears came. Now he was alone. He had no other kin, as he didn't count his sister as family. He had his guns, his horses, a bit of gold, and his friend Preacher. He was 18 years old. Having been born and reared on a farm, the earth was naturally a part of Kirby. So on the Utah side of the hole, a tall young man planted several gardens. Corn, beans, greens, potatoes, all carefully irrigated from a small stream. Preacher scoffed at Kirby, called him a sod buster. But Kirby noticed the old man ate up the vegetables on his plate and usually helped himself to seconds. Hell, sometimes thirds. Kirby caught up with a band of wild horses, mustangs with some Appaloosa mixed in, and started raising horses. He now had a respectable herd. He no longer practiced with his colts. He didn't need to practice. He was a crack shot and blindingly fast. Preacher, now pushing hard into his 68th year, was just as spry as when Kirby had first laid eyes on him. and he was just as cantankerous and ornery, too. Kirby laid claim to all the land between Vermilion Creek to the east and about two sections past the still ill-defined Utah state line to the west. All the land from Diamond Peak to the north, down to and including Brown's Hole. He rode to a small town about 150 miles from the hole and filed on his claim. But the town died out a year later, becoming yet another ghost town on the western landscape. And Kirby's claim was never recognized. It was illegal from the outset, since he was claiming far too much land, but Kirby figured, and figured correctly, that since the land was so desolate and in some instances downright barren that no one else had wanted anyway. Tucked away in the far reaches of the northwestern part of Colorado, Kirby and Preacher lived alone and became something of a mystery, much as the hermit Pat Lynch would someday become. Pat later lived in the canyon with a pet mountain lion named Jenny Lind. Like Pat, Kirby and Preacher were not talkative men, sometimes going for days without speaking. A wild and raging canyon cut down from the hole to Green River. It would later be named Lodore Canyon by an army major, a geologist who was fond of quoting the poet Southey's "How the Waters Came Down at Lodore" as he shot the rabbits. Emmett Jensen's grave was now covered with a profusion of wildflowers clinging stubbornly to the rocky soil. Kirby visited the grave weekly, sometimes standing for hours by the site. He spoke silently to his paw, wishing he knew what to do. He always left with a mild feeling of discontent, as if he should be doing something about the men who killed his paw. At first, Preacher had told him he was too young. But as the months marched into a year, then 2 years, Preacher knew the boy was gone, and in its place, a man had grown. He knew, too, from his half century and more on the trail, that the young man called Smoke was a potentially dangerous man, big and solid and steady and strong as a bear, a man whose draw with those old Navy Colts was so fast as to be a blur, and he never missed, never. The old mountain man knew little of the emotion called love. He had liked the squaws he had wintered with, sharing their buffalo robes. Yeah, he'd liked them all. He'd enjoyed playing with his children. He had once loved a woman named Jenny, but her death had been so painful that Preacher had driven the remembrance of love from his mind out of sheer self-preservation. And somewhere in the back of his mind, he held a memory of his mother, a faded, time-worn retention of the woman, but without a clear face. He knew he must have loved her as a child, but the call of the open plains, the wilderness, the unknown, the high lonesome, the untraveled hills and mountains and trails had been too much, and they had overpowered the love. But with the man he called Smoke, the mountain man knew what he felt must be love, for in Smoke was everything the old man would want in a son. Strength, daring, courage, eagerness to face the unknown, a willingness to learn, to pit himself against the wilderness. Finally, the old man admitted the truth to himself. He didn't want Smoke to face the men on that list for fear of losing him. He had been deliberately holding him back.
Holding him back, and that ain't right. Man is 20 years old. It's time to cut loose the tie string and let him taste the world of people. He ain't gonna like it just like me, but he's gotta see for himself. Smoke! Men coming!
The young man known but to a few white men as Smoke stepped out of the cabin. His guns, as always, belted around his waist, the right-hand Colt hanging lower than the butt-forward left gun. Had there been a woman with the detachment of cavalry, she would have called the young man handsome, and her heart might have beat just a tad faster because he was striking looking.
Hello! I was not aware this area was inhabited by white men.
You is now.
My name is Major John Wesley Powell, United States Army.
I'm Preacher. This here's Smoke. Now that we know each other, why don't you leave?
Why, sir, we've come to do a bit of exploring.
Exploring? Hell, what do you want to know about the country? Just name it, I'll tell you. I'll save you a mess of trouble. Then you can leave.
May we dismount?
Dismount, sit, squat, stand, or kick your heels up in the air. It don't make no damn difference to me.
All right, men. Dismount and stand easy. You old mountain men never cease to amaze me. And I mean that as a compliment.
Pal's eyes turned to Kirby.
But you're far too young to have been a mountain man. Are you men related?
Oh, I'm his son. He fell in the fountain of youth a few years back, but he bumped his head doing it, and now he can't recall where it is. I'm just waiting.
Pardon me if I get to the point. I have things to tell you, Preacher.
All right.
What do either of you men know about the river that flows through the canyon?
It's wet.
Yep, that sure as hell is, and it ain't no place for a pilgrim.
Nope, sure as hell ain't.
Then I take it that both of you have traversed the Green River.
Hell no, but I've been down it.
Hell yes, I've been down it too. I've been down it, up it, through it, crossed it, one time back in 39 and went over it.
Excuse me, Major Powell, but I know for a fact that the only man to ever shoot those rapids was General Ashley back in 23 and 24.
Yeah, his name's still on the rock on the eastern side of the canyon wall. And don't you ever call Preacher a liar again.
The young officer stirred.
Stand easy, Robert. This is your first tour of duty out here, Bob. You know nothing of Western men. Until you learn more about the customs here, it would behoove you to curb your tongue. Calling a man a liar, or merely inferring he is one, is a shooting matter west of the Mississippi. This is not Philadelphia, so just be quiet. He meant no offense, Mr. Smoke.
Not Mr. Just Smoke.
Unusual name.
I give it to him, after he killed his first two men. I think he was 15 or thereabouts.
We saw a grave coming in. The name was Jensen.
My father.
I'm sorry, sir.
Not nearly as sorry as the men who killed him are gonna be.
You make up your mind, boy?
About a half an hour ago.
We going after him?
Yep.
I figures.
I gather you men live here?
I own it.
Own it? How much of it?
All of it.
Why, that's hundreds of square miles.
We like lots of room.
You have papers on this?
I filed on it, yeah. But I have no objections to you and your men staying here. Just don't trample my gardens or take my horses.
I assure you, sir, we'll leave the...
No one even saw the young man draw, cock, and pull the trigger of his right-hand Colt. It was done as fast as a man could blink. The major looked down. A headless rattlesnake writhed at his boots.
Sweet Molly! I never even seen him draw!
Huh. That was the most impressive shooting with a handgun I believe I've ever seen. I thank you, Smoke.
Man can't be too careful out here. I take it upon myself to tell all the pilgrims that.
I don't believe I've ever seen a man draw cock and fire a pistol that quickly. I'm sure I haven't. But I'm told the outlaw Jesse James is also quite proficient with a handgun.
Who?
Jesse James. The Missouri bank robber and outlaw. Do you know him?
I've met him.
Kirby drew his right-hand Colt and tossed the weapon to the major. The cavalryman inspected the pistol, noting the initials J.J. carved into the handles. Powell tossed the pistol back to Kirby.
I see. And where are you originally from, Smoke?
That ain't a polite question to ask out here.
You're right. I shouldn't have asked it. I withdraw it.
Nah, it's all right. I'm from the southwestern part of Missouri.
Did you fight in the Civil War?
Nope, but my pa fought in the war between the states.
Ah, yes. Well, men, mount up! We shan't disturb you, gentlemen. We'll bivouac on the other side of the canyon. Perhaps we'll see each other again.
I doubt it.
Oh?
Me and Preacher got things to do and places to go. Any horses you see around here with the SJ brand belongs to us. If you need a horse, take your pick of the Mustangs and Geldings. Leave the mares alone. Just leave the money, what you think they're worth, in the cave at the hole.
Thank you. You are a trusting man, Smoke.
Not really. I just believe you don't want to cheat me.
Major Powell sensed in the young man a heavy, almost tangible aura of danger. The dark eyes gave no hint of what lay behind him.
No. No, I don't believe I want to do that either.
The cavalrymen were gone in a cloud of dust, all but an old buckskin-clad scout who had guided them to this old post. He had not dismounted. He looked now at Preacher.
Thought you're dead.
Yeah? Well, that's what you get for trying to stir up that shit between your ears.
Walk right into that, I reckon.
The man called Rio shifted his gaze to Kirby.
Met a man who knowed your pa in the war. One of Mosby's people. All stove up now. Living over to the hot springs on the San Juan Valley there. He heard about your pa getting lead in them west of here. His name is Gaultier, and don't ask me how to spell it. He might know something you want to know. Told him I'd tell you if I saw you. I seen you. I told you. Good seeing you again, Preacher.
Right, nice seeing you, Rio.
Friend of yours?
Yeah, not so as you know it. We fought over the same squall back in 49 and he lost. We ain't had much to do with each other ever since then. He's a sore loser.
Can we trust him?
Oh, yeah. We don't cotton to one another, but you can trust him.
Want to take a ride to the Springs?
What do you think?
Pagosa Springs, which translated means engine healing waters, lie at the bottom of the state, not far from the New Mexico line, in what would someday become the San Juan National Forest. It was several hundred miles as the crow flies from Brown's Hole through some of the roughest and most beautiful country in the state. By late summer, when the two men reached the hot springs, Preacher had worked himself up into a state.
Goddamn farmers, I ain't never seen so many pilgrims in all my life.
They had seen a half dozen farms in a month. For Preacher, it was his first encounter with barbed wire. He had cut his hand, ripped his shirt, and finally fell down before getting loose from the sharp tangle. Kirby had sat a saddle and just laughed at Preacher's antics, which only made matters worse and made the profanity more intense. Just east of the Uncompahgre Plateau, an irritated farmer's wife threatened both of them with a double-barreled shotgun before Kirby could convince her they meant no harm to her, her pigs, or her kids.
Now, woman, you put down that cannon! What? I opened up this country for you! Whoa, shit!
Stay away from me, you dirty old man!
Dirty old man? Why, you lard-butted heifer! I ought to...
Shit!
Shit! Damn, woman! Now that was just plain dumb! You done fired both shots! If we were to try to hurt you, you'd be plumb out of luck now!
Thank God my husband always told me to carry a pistol, too!
Oh, the hell with it! Move! Damn old biddy! No respect for mountain men, none at all!
Civilization is upon us, Preacher!
Looked like buckshot to me.
They stopped at mid-morning just west of the Needle Mountains to replenish their supplies at a wild, roaring mining camp that would soon be named Rico. It was an outlaw hangout in the early 1870s and would continue to be rough and rowdy until almost the turn of the century. The population of the as-yet-unnamed settlement had rapidly diminished due to recent engine raids. But there were still about 100 men and half a dozen prostitutes in the camp. Kirby and Preacher dismounted in front of the trading post saloon. As was his custom, Kirby slipped the thongs from the hammers of his colts at dismounting. They bought their supplies and were about to leave when two rough-dressed and unshaven men, both wearing guns, walked in and blocked the door.
Who owns that horse out there? The one with an SJ brand.
Kirby laid his purchases on the counter.
I do.
Which way'd you ride in from?
Preacher had slipped to the right, his left hand covering the hammer of his Henry, concealing the click as he thumbed it back. Kirby faced the man, his right hand hanging loose by his side. His left hand was just inches from his left-hand gun.
Who wants to know and why?
Pike's my name, and I say you come through my diggings yesterday and stole my dust.
And I say you're a liar.
Why, you little pup, I'll shoot your ears off.
Why don't you try? I'm tired of hearing you shoot your mouth off.
I think I'll just kill you for that.
Pike and his partner reach for their guns. Pike, with two holes in his chest, died with his back to a support pole, his eyes still open, unbelieving. Neither had managed to pull a pistol more than halfway out of leather.
Good God! I never even seen the draw!
Preacher had the muzzle of his Henry to cover the men at the tables. The bartender put his hand slowly on the bar, indicating that he wanted no trouble.
We'll be leaving now.
Kirby holstered his Colts and picked up his purchases from the counter. He walked out the door.
What are we supposed to do with the bodies?
Bury them.
What's that kid's name?
Smoke.
Preacher and Smoke camped deep in the big timber that night beside a rushing mountain stream with the earth for a bed and the stars for a canopy.
How you feel, Smoke?
Why? I feel just fine, Preacher. How come you asked that?
He just killed two men back yonder, Smoke. In front of 12, 15 old boys. And all they could do was gape at you with the mouths hanging open. Now, I ain't saying Pike and his friends didn't need killing. Because it did, Smoke. They was bullies and troublemakers and trash. Pike's been in these mountains for years and he ain't worth shit. But the point I'm making is this. Right now, the story's being told in that there camp. Tomorrow night, it'll be told around a dozen fires. This time next month, it'll be stretched to where you killed five men. And that's where the salt gets spread on the cut.
You mean I have a reputation?
Exactly. And then every two-bit kid who thinks he's a gun hand will be looking for you to make a name for himself.
They'll never do it from the front.
You that sure of yourself?
I am.
Yeah, I reckon you is at that.